Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, December 7th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. I have my voice back. For anyone who got to hear me last week, you know I was sounding like a croaker. I don't know, it was pretty horrible. I don't know what exactly happened there, but at least I got it back. It was pretty painful not to talk for a couple days. It is 37 degrees and very cloudy, kind of damp here in upstate New York. You know, I always call this upstate New York, but I guess I'm kind of upstate. I'm upstate versus downstate. Downstate's New York City, and western New York is Buffalo, and I'm more central, so I guess it's upstate. Who cares? All right, so where do we leave off on Wednesday? And yeah, it was already Wednesday since I did the last show. It was 2 days there. I tried really hard on Friday, but there was just no way I could have done an hour. We titled the show Gates, Zuckerberg, CRISPR, and Chinese Clone Factories. And if you remember, we had briefly touched on, because they had that climate conference, the COP21 going on in France, it was quite fitting at the time. We had touched on Zuckerberg and Gates teaming up with all kinds of other rich moguls to create their new clean energy fund. And it was announced at the climate conference itself that they'd put all this money in and they're going to do all these wonderful things. We also heard Mr. Bill Gates, you know, talking about how we have to get our carbon quotient down to zero and they're going to help us do that. We ended the show, though, but I think where we're going to begin the show today, there's been a lot of crazy things going on this weekend, too. If you've been looking at the Before the First Cup feed, you're going to say, wow, it's like they pulled out all stops this weekend. We had looked at a couple different things at the end. We looked at Jennifer Doudna was on CBS This Morning and gave a 101 interview as to what exactly is CRISPR. So I think we kind of understand that now. They make these custom RNAs that act like a zipper, and basically it goes in when they get it into your body and it unzips the existing DNA strand and zips in this new modification that they've made. And she really thinks it's going to be successful, of course, in curing every disease on the planet, just about. I don't know, they didn't think everything, but anything that was genetic as far as a disease was target for something that in the future they were going to aim for curing. And, you know, if they get the accuracy down and they understand what they're doing and it isn't mad science still, because they still don't understand all the switches and how things work, it might be different like 100 years from now. But I absolutely would not be standing in line to have all of my DNA changed to fix a genetic defect that I had since birth. So good luck with that. I don't know. We'll see where that goes. There's all kinds of horrible stuff going on now. So anyway, back to China. So there's been some things going on with China. China has been accused of pushing the ethical limits of cloning embryos. And there was also, on top of the COP21 climate conference last week, there was also the summit on ethics in gene editing that happens, and that was in Washington, D.C. And China, the United States, and the U.K. were there. Now, and something that was interesting that I didn't see in any of the publications that I had looked at about that event in Washington, and we've talked about this a few times before. Remember, back in 2011, I believe, they had found that lab in the U.K. that had a few hundred chimeras, human animal chimeras mixed up and growing in the petri dishes. And so when we point the finger at China and go, oh, you know, they probably have entire artificial womb warehouses where they're growing their genetically modified new Chinese army. You know, I mean, they've already been doing this stuff in the UK as well. And I'm going to have to say that just because we haven't gotten caught doesn't mean that we haven't been doing the same thing somewhere under Dugway Proving Ground or a place similar to that that has tentacles with DARPA. Actually, as a matter of fact, speaking about that, I found this yesterday, and it just reminded me of so many different X-Files episodes. How to Build an Artificial Womb. This is out of IO9. Artificial wombs are a staple of science fiction, but could we really build one? And as time passes, and mind you, the story is from 2013. So we're, and this is April 2013. So we're almost 2¾ years past this, right? Almost going on 3 years. So I don't know. You know, we've talked about that too, is they start to be able to determine by your genetic makeup. And I don't know if you guys have seen all the 23andMe Christmas ads on now about get your genetic data, be able to tell whether or not you have this gene or that, or what family you came from and what country. And then the other ads I'm seeing all over the place and all over YouTube too, but I saw them when I was visiting my family and the TV was on constantly. Everything is about this new genetic treatment that they have at all these great big fancy cancer centers coming to a town near you where they can cure all these different types of cancers on an individualized basis called precision medicine, people. And they're really starting to spin this up now. So just go give your swab and maybe we'll be able to cure you. But if not, you'll be the first one in line for some of our guinea pig medicine that we're pretending we know how it works. But anyways, we were discussing a while back and we were looking at 23andMe and the genomics databases is that, you know, they've been collecting now for quite a while DNA data from people voluntarily who, of course, are swabbing for ancestry as well as other things. We have people who have been forcibly required to give DNA, like anyone who gets I think it was in New York we discovered that you don't even have to be convicted of a crime anymore. If you're arrested for anything, they're going to take a DNA swab and put you in the database. We also discovered, and I don't know if I ever did the story, I had it queued up a couple times and I ran out of time, but there are the, maybe we did it, there are the infant databases. California and New York are two that I know off the top of my head. And in this one particular story, they had talked about California, how for the last generation at least, it has been a requirement for newborns to do a blood test, a HEAL test, and they take a sample of blood and they put that into the database. And your child is already in the master database. So, you know, if they've been doing that now for every newborn for a generation at least in some of these towns and cities, you got to think that there's probably a lot more than we know that exist in the DNA database. But so once they be able to decode now every trait that you have and what's a bad trait and what's a good trait. And I mean, we're even talking about like whether or not you have the drunk asshole gene, right? We saw that last week, you know, eventually. And oh, and when we look at epigenetics and how, you know, stress and eating bad and watching porn, I don't know, all affect your genes that you're going to be able to pass down to your progeny, you know, there's going to come a point where it's going to be pretty easy for them to do a genetic scan and to be able to tell whether or not you're good breeding stock. And I guess that's the one big thing that we should be very concerned about. I mean, despite the fact that they could, you know, as they're infecting us with their technology, there could easily be an off switch. No, don't worry about that. But they're going to be able to decide one day whether or not you're going to be able to procreate. And maybe, you know, I know there's some of us that are over the hill who've already done our duty and are still suffering. But I mean, future generations, you know, it's not going to be procreate at will. And of course, they can point to all of these parents who apparently have no training, who have let their kids be latchkeys, who have now gone off the hook because they don't have any societal norms, who are part of our teenage terrorism, quote unquote terrorism problem. You know, they really could spin that. Having a child does not come with a manual. They didn't warn me about that one. But you figure it out pretty damn quick. And for what you don't figure out, I don't know, then you suffer. But I really think at some point in the future, they are going to make selective breeding the solution to a lot of society's future ills, right? We're going to be able to have the perfect children, you know, no more genetic defects, and we'll be able to augment those children with superhuman brains or superhuman speed for price, of course. But you will be certified to have children. We will be breeding the best of the best, just like prize racehorses. So that way there isn't going to be a taxing cost in society. And we will be able to do it in a sustainable way to make sure there's a sustainable number of people on the planet. And you can see how that could definitely be an alternate future here. All right, let's read this artificial womb thing anyway. Artificial wombs are a staple of science fiction, but could we really build one? As time passes, we're inching closer and closer to the day when it will finally become possible to grow a baby entirely outside of the human body. And here is what we need to do to pull it off. Now, I just saw, too, that there was a story that came out of, like, John Hopkins, or I don't know, they do brain stuff, though. I'm trying to remember the name of the university. Maybe we can find, I'm not really going to read it and look it up, but I'm going to reference it. But they were talking about here very, very shortly, they had just done a surgery for a woman who had lost her uterus. And I don't know if it was to some sort of like cancer or something, but, or maybe she was born that way without a uterus, but they had done a uterus replacement surgery and it was the first time ever. And it seemed to be very successful. And they were all elated over this first-time surgery of being able to transplant a uterus. Now, where they got the uterus from, I don't know. I don't know if it was out of a cadaver or if they 3D printed grew it out of stem cells. I have no idea. I didn't ask. But after this surgery with this transplanted uterus, what do I see them talking about later on down in the story? And, of course, here comes this agenda. How the transplanted uterus is going to allow future men, yes, 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 future men, to also be able to have uteruses, uteri, uteruses, a plural, or uteri, implanted if they want to carry children. Now, come on. I don't know about you, but I don't think I've ever met a guy who would want to have a uterus implanted. Maybe one or two, but not many. And I could imagine that it would be a pretty invasive surgery. You have to connect it to like all your arteries. I don't even know how that would possibly go, but just wanted to mention that one. Anyway, so how far out there are artificial uteri? Honestly, I don't think the lab is too far away, and they have some sort of like cryo container with fluids in it and all kinds of googly wires. I'm sure that they could probably grow some sort of fetal organism in some super fluid to make it develop. You know, we have no idea what is going on in some of these super secret multi-billion dollar labs that we know that exist out there. All right, so here's what we need to pull off the artificial womb. More than just an incubator, a fully functional artificial uterus will be substantially more complex than the modern incubator, a clunky and somewhat obtrusive device that provides a preemie with oxygen, protection from the cold, hydration, and nutrition via intravenous catheter and adequate levels of humidity. Even in the best of cases, the current state of the art does not allow for the viability of outside the womb until mid or late second trimester. Prior to that, a mother's womb is the only question, and quite obviously the future incubators or a full-blown artificial uterus will push the limits of viability further and further until the entire gestational cycle can happen outside of the body. We are still several decades away from that, but two primary areas that need to be developed, including biotechnology for things such as personalized genomics and tissue engineering. Yes, yes, we know all about that. And, oh, nanotechnology. And, yeah, I have some sort of mutating, morphing, liquid metal nanotech to be ready to be injected in your blood story if we get there today. I lost my spot. To facilitate micro-scale interactions and growth through artificial means. Smart computer systems and monitoring devices. And I have a story about some of that too. Google's getting in on the blood draw. Should also be developed to track the progress of the fetus's growth. Well, they could just write them a smart app. And while automatically adjusting for changing conditions. In terms of the specifics, there are broad requirements. I don't know. Do we really want to read, like, the technicals? I don't know if we want to read all the technicals. I don't want to know about everything exactly that I need. So we're going to need, an epithelium and endometrium. I guess we could. Artificial, okay, well, let's read the top pieces. So we'll need an artificial endometrium, which is the inner lining of the artificial uterus, should resemble the real thing as much as possible. We'll need an artificial placenta, and indeed the growing fetus will also need a placenta, the organ which connects to the uterine wall, allowing for the delivery of nutrients, the elimination of waste, the exchange of gases through the mother's blood supply. And yes, we knew about that. And here's what's disturbing me. I remember seeing this picture. This is the superfluid. It's a large container. And they have a baby. I'm not sure if this is a lamb or a goat. Oh, it's a goat, it says. They have an amniotic fluid with a baby goat growing in this fluid, which is pretty scary looking. It says this work on an artificial placenta has already begun. Goats have been kept alive. Oh, poor baby goat. For up to 237 hours in amniotic tanks through a process called extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO for short. They also need some synthetic amniotic fluid, dismissed as unimportant by biologists for many years. The fluid that fills the amniotic spaces is a complex and dynamic milieu. It changes as the pregnancy progresses, and it is critical to fetal well-being. So they'll have to come up with that. Temperature regulation, proper stimulation. And I'm sure that that has a lot to do with, you know, while you're carrying around the developing fetus, that baby can hear and feel all your movements, as well as all your talking and your interactions, any type of social media, music, any type of moving. So to be stationary in a silent lab, let's say, how is that going to affect the development of this artificially grown organism? Who knows? But yes, proper stimulation. I would say there should be some sort of artificial, like, mommy sounds going on, including the heartbeat. Remember, they can hear your heartbeat and breathing also. Microbiome stimulation, which, you know, this is when the baby is born. They, of course, are exposed to the microbiome as they are passing out through the birth canal. And it ends up in the baby's gut, where it helps them digest food, regulate bowels, develop their immune system, and protect against infection. And we have scientists now studying frantically the microbiome, because there are so many different connections to the full body systems that occur there. We've talked about the vagus nerve and the direct gut to brain connection, and some of the DARPA ElectRx medical treatments that they've been messing with. They're using electrical stimulation, magnetic stimulation, sound stimulation on that vagus nerve to be able to influence different body systems. That then, of course, that microbiome and the organisms that live within that microbiome have a direct influence upon. So how long is it going to be before we have an artificial womb and we no longer not only don't need mothers and fathers? And I don't know if I did this story either, but there was a story not too long ago that talked about turning. They were able to flip stem cells. No, not stem cells. They were able to flip, I don't know if it was an egg or a sperm. It was one of them. But they could flip sex now on the actual cells themselves. So, I mean, there's no, so we could choose sex. We could mix them in a dish. We could put them in an artificial womb and we can grow them. I mean, is there really any need left? It's a pretty scary thought because when you don't now need humans to procreate, you could have places such as China growing millions of human army clones or something as scary as that, all in secret. You know, we might be over there looking for weapons of mass destruction, but are we really looking for the bunker that's got a room full of clones in the basement? Probably not. And that leads me to this next story that we kind of read on last Wednesday, but let's kick it off here because there's a lot scarier stuff to come. Is is human cloning here? Chinese scientists ready to clone people at the replication factory with quotations around it. Now, Friday we looked at a different story that had talked about their racehorse and they had racehorses and dogs, security dogs, and something else that they were working on. Oh, cows. Here we go. Yeah, let's pull that one up too. They were going to clone over 1 million cows. And it's funny that we found that because, and I think actually Hammy sent me this story. Funny we ran across this because we'd just been asking what the hell happened to that entire, I guess they're not flocks. What do they call them for cows? That entire gaggle of cows that they had not only cloned but genetically engineered to produce human breast milk. They had over 300 of them, and that was back in 2013. We were just asking what happened to those, and here they come. World's largest cloning factory in China, set to produce cattle, racehorses, and sniffer dogs. I wonder if those are drug dogs. Up to 1 million cattle embryos per year. You might as well do both of these. China is no stranger to the commercial opportunities of genetic engineering. But its latest ambition applies the controversial technique on a much grander scale. The nation is currently building the world's largest cloning factory in a government-sponsored business park in Tianjin, which is where they had that massive group of explosions there a few months ago, with the factory set to commence operations by mid-2016. And with a projected cost of just $500 million, oh, any rich U.S. billionaire can buy that one. The factory will primarily focus on cloned cattle embryos for food. Now, in our research here, we discovered back in 2008, the FDA rubber stamped cloned meat on the marketplace for our consumption without labeling. If you don't believe me, search back through the Before the First Cup archive on YouTube. You're going to see like cloned beef, GMO cloning. We did a whole series on those. Go into the notes of the shows because all the links are there to the stories that talked about that. And actually, that was all over mainstream news and everything back in 2008. It was approved lock, stock, and barrel. And it could be out there in the head of the USDA. When asked in an interview how much cloned meat is on the market, said he has no idea. And remember, the only meat that was not approved for our consumption on the market was sheep because of Dolly. But everything else was pretty much approved. All right, anyway, back to the story. The 14,000 square meter facility being led by a Chinese company called Boya Life Group. Boya, I said, like Chef Boyardee. Boya, B-O-Y-A-L-I-F-E, Boya Life Group, is expected to produce 100,000 cattle embryos a year initially, eventually increasing to 1 million, which could see it becoming responsible for 5% of China's annual premium cattle market. So it sounds like they're just doing this for China. But a million, that's a lot of cloned cattle. Cloning technology is already around us. It's just that not everyone knows about it, says Zhu Jianchun, the company's CEO, as reported by Owen Gwu at the New York Times. Well, apparently, Zhu Jianchun is saying exactly what I've been saying. No, it's been going on for a long time, and it's just in some deep, dark, scary basement that they've been doing this shit. But now the cat's coming out of the bag. I mean, this is some pretty scary stuff, and this Zhu Jianchun says, quote, "And I can tell you that cloned beef is the tastiest beef I've ever had," unquote. Oh! So there you have it, right out of the cloner's mouth, and he's been eating his own cloned beef. According to Zhu, the production of cloned beef will help bolster the Chinese food industry, with local farmers struggling to produce enough livestock to meet market demand. And of course, yes, it's this increasing population. And you know, the thing that's interesting about China tackling this is that one of the things that we'd been reading about, I mean, this might not be a bad thing for China, let's say. I know I don't want to be eating this stuff, but we probably already are and just don't even know it. But China, you know, we've had some competition, especially with this quote-unquote global warming or natural disasters happening everywhere that are affecting the crops over the last 4 years or so. We've been having all kinds of grain shortages and things. You know, they've been letting some of the silos go empty. They've had to cull some of the animals. I know there was a big culling of cattle last year or the year before, right at the end of the season, because there were droughts and whatever, and they couldn't produce enough food. But we have these stockpiles, these nation stockpiles, and when the grains go on the market, there's bidding for those grains that happen. And China was one of the big bidders that was taking up a lot of the free-flowing grain on the market to feed their growing population. So having a big clone factory to pump out a million cows a year to feed their people isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like I said, keep it the hell away from me. I don't want any. I really don't care. And I'd be more worried about them cloning people or making like some sort of killer. I mean, cows are very docile animals. But you know what? What if they turned it into Franken-cow or X-cow? You know, with these big steel horns. You know, my friend was showing me these longhorn cattle. And their horns are like 8 feet long or 10 feet long, something like that. We don't have longhorn cattle up here in New York, but I've seen pictures of them. Could you imagine a stampede of longhorn genetically modified Chinese cattle arriving on a sailing ship? You know what I mean? Pulls into the port of San Diego and the gates come down. We have the invasion of these Frankenstein cows. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but is it really? Maybe it's not cows. Maybe it's baboons or hyenas that like rip people to shreds limb from limb, you know, with like infrared eyes, cameras built into them. I mean, the cows in particular for beef is not what is alarming to me. It's the implications that we have a factory that is large enough to produce a million cattle a year in China, by some Zhu Jianchun mad scientist who owns it. And they could be doing anything that they want. Do we have UN inspectors? Do we have ethics inspectors going to China to investigate what they're doing in their super secret laboratories? With their mad science gone mad scientists? No, we don't. We have conferences in D.C. for 3 days going, oh, don't you be genetically modifying humans. Shame on you, China, that you've already been messing with that. And China's going, but, you know, we don't have a generation of women. We had to grow women so our boys could have wives. You know, this is some very scary shit. All right, let's continue on. So anyway, yeah, he's saying it's the tastiest beef he ever had. Woohoo! One reason we have had so much low quality beef is because we haven't applied clone technology, says Zhu. This is the only way to allow Chinese and many other people in the world, oh, ding, ding, they're going global, to enjoy high quality beef in an efficient manner. And someone had suggested to me yesterday that they might be a prime producer in the future of something like a Kobe beef, which of course has a really nice high price tag on it and would probably justify the cost of making a perfect cloned cow. But as this becomes more and more commonplace, the price, of course, is going to get cheaper like it always does. In addition to beef production, however, this facility is also planning on cloning a range of other animals, including sniffer dogs, pet dogs, and I had seen the genetically modified, I don't remember what kind of dog it was, but they already were touting the GMO dogs, the pets that look like little tigers or something, and even racehorses. Its creators also believe the cloning factory will be beneficial for conservation purposes, saying cloning could help save endangered species from becoming extinct. This is going to change our world and change our lives, said Zhu. It is going to make our life better, and we are so very, very excited about it. Animal cloning for meat and dairy production does exist already in the world elsewhere, although on a much smaller scale. In countries like the US and the UK, cloning often requires special permits or is largely used for breeding purposes as opposed to selling for food. And when we read about the US operations going on, and I thought it was that same guy, Simplot, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure it was. The Simplot potato dude was the same one who had his it wasn't even a dairy farm. It was a beef farm down in Texas where they were messing with some genetic modification. But one of their big issues was is that it was not economically viable. But they had cloned some of their best, what do they call them? A steed is in a horse. But their best male cows for breeding stock, but they weren't, that was not where the food came from. They would breed the best male cows, and then that male cow would have offspring, and then the offspring would become food. At mass production levels, however, some are skeptical of the Chinese facility's stated focus, you think? Saying the expense involved in cloning may not be cost effective for making and selling meats like beef. Well, like I said, too, if they did it smart and maybe they hooked up with Japanese, which, you know, Japan's all radioactive. So how radioactive is that super expensive Kobe beef you got there? Maybe they could do some sort of deal and make it economical. I don't know. I think cloning technology can be used for endangered species, but is not very necessary for animal husbandry, says Ma Wenfang, an analyst at Beijing Orient Agribusiness Consultant. He does not think this will be very economical and doubts that the model will take off anytime soon. So remember, it's just another rich millionaire billionaire, this time in China, deciding that they're going to find a way to profit off of mad science gone mad. All right, so this other story, so that was out of sciencealert.com. This one's out of RT from last week. Is human cloning here? Chinese scientists ready to clone people at the replication factory. The Chinese scientist who led the development of the world's first cloning factory now says that he's ready to replicate humans. His only fear is that society is not ready to accept this, he told American Free Press. The giant cloning facility is set to open within the next 7 months and plans to be cloning 1 million cows a year by 2020. Other animals to be cloned include racehorses and police dogs. Oh, yeah, sniffer dogs. They are drug dogs. Everything in the supermarket looks good, and it's almost shiny, good-looking, and uniformly shaped for animals. We were not able to do that in the past, but with our cloning factory, we choose to do so now, says Zhu Xiangcheng to American Free Press. The Boya Life Group, which is behind the factory, is collaborating with a company from South Korea. Now, this is a new piece of information. Ding, ding, ding. What's interesting about South Korea is, didn't we just read a story about a South Korean robotics company that was building an army of industrial robots to industrialize China's factories and to take over those $2 an hour jobs for making keyboards and mice in their Chinese factories? Yes, we did. The Boya Life Group, which is behind the cloning factory, is collaborating with a company from South Korea named Sooam Biotech Research Foundation, and that is spelled S-O-O-A-M, Sooam Biotech Research Foundation. Sooam has already been developing the cloning of woolly mammoths, and I talked about that. I saw a National Geographic special where they went out and they literally were inspecting the uteri. I have to look if that's the plural. They were manually, I have to tell you, it was pretty disgusting, manually inspecting the uteri of elephants on the African plain to find one that would be appropriate for transplanting a cloned woolly mammoth into. So that is really happening, by the way. Sooam has already been developing the cloning of the woolly mammoths, and it has recreated dead pets for its owners. The latter is quite a lucrative market, with some people reportedly preparing to pay up to $100,000 for bringing Fido back to life as a clone. Boya Life, that, wouldn't that be freaky? Like, makes you wonder, would Fido, like, acquire the same traits as the original animal? Like, I know they'd look the same, and but they'd genetically be the same. So would their personality develop the same? You know, would they have the same little quirks and things? I don't know. And would there be some sort of like cell memory where the animal instantly remembers you because the other one, you know, just like we discover with epigenetics, I mean, all your experiences influence and change your makeup in your body as you're exposed to things in your environment and different, you know, experiences in life. Would that happen with a clone? And is that passed down in the cloning? I don't know. But it's a pretty freaky thought. Damn, too bad I don't have an extra $100,000 to find out, though. All right, anyway, Boya Life is also working with Sooam Biotech Research Foundation and the Chinese Academy of Sciences to develop primate cloning. And yes, we're going to clone primates and repopulate the forest. I'm sure that that is not the next step to cloning humans. No. Says this would mean just one step further from monkeys to human cloning, says Zhu Xiangcheng. Yes, well, see, I guessed his agenda. The technology is already there, and if this is allowed, I do not think that there are other companies better than Boya Life at making a better technology, said. However, hampering the project are, oh, those pesky ethical issues. The company says it has to be, quote-unquote, self-restrained to avoid a possible public backlash. Zhu is hopeful that people will change their views and let the research go ahead. Unfortunately, currently the only way to have a child is to have it be half its mom and half its dad. But maybe in the future, you have three choices instead of one. And I mean, they already did that in the UK. There was the three parents zygote, whatever. They took three people and they mixed them all together. Anyway, back to the story. Maybe in the future, you have three choices instead of one. You have either a 50-50, or if you have a choice of having the genetics 100% from daddy or 100% from mommy, this is only a choice, says the 44-year-old chief executive Zoo. Zoo also wants to lift the veil on cloning and dispel people's fears about it. He says, we want the public to see that cloning is not really that crazy and that scientists are really that weird, dressed in lab coats, hiding behind sealed doors, doing weird experiments, unquote. Oh, he must have been listening to the show. He's like, Joel, you're just really putting us in a bad light. We're not a bunch of freaks. Well, maybe. Maybe not. All right. I have so many stories having my voice gone for 2 days. I was chomping at the bit. And we're about 15 minutes. Not really sure where I want to go. I think I might save. I have a whole bunch of robot stories. And uploading you to the machine. Yes, there really is a startup out there that wants to do that now. I think we're going to look at a couple of these and we're going to go back tomorrow. All right. So human clones, doggy clones, cow clones. How far is it going to go? Well, as they start moving us, man, toward the machine and telling us, you know, that we have to have a green society and cows produce too much methane, cow farts, right, are contributing to global warming. Then we did two whole shows about all these newest stories of them telling us how red meat's bad for us, gonna cause cancer, how my toast is gonna cause me cancer with that acrylamide because I make it a little brown, and how mealyworms have enough protein, have more than enough protein as in a steak, and I could have my little desktop countertop mealyworm farm for $29.95, and they're crunchy and good on salads too. Yes. Well, gets even better than that. So as we're pushing this agenda toward the quote unquote green climate that's going to enslave us, we also have this technological revolution going on that's all intertwined with technology, the human body, the internet of things, and precision medicine. All the big tech titans are investing not only in green technologies, but also in longevity. Remember all their longevity projects. Title of the one story we read was Tech Titans Defy Death. And they were investing in all these companies that were going to come up with cures. They want to cure death, remember? They want to be able to monitor you 24/7, this precision medicine we already have. I saw my health insurance plan for next year for $5. You know, we used to have the copay. Way back in the day, it was a $5 copay to go to the doctor. Now it's probably like $35 or $40 just for a regular, you know, I got a sore throat type visit. But they now, this is the first time ever, we can go online. And for $5, I can have a telemedicine appointment with a doctor somewhere. Who the hell knows where? Maybe he's in India. And get my $5 diagnosis. Have him electronically send a prescription to my local pharmacy that I can then go pick up in 5 minutes or less. Well, Google has totally gotten on board with all of these new technologies. Google is actually doing leaps and bounds, getting themselves into the middle of everything. And I think I closed the story. I'm pretty sure I did, but hold on, because I saved all this. There were two Google stories I had, and I think that's where we're going to finish it up for today. So getting in on the green economy, Google is now planning, and I'm assuming that this is something that's probably going to be rolled out worldwide. Google is planning for a zero waste circular economy. What the hell is a circular economy? Well, you know, I don't think recycling is a bad thing at all. But when I have large corporations who I already consider to be intrusive in my life because they have microphones open on every browser and they're scanning my cell phone every time I talk, who knows what the hell they're doing, as they got keywords and artificial intelligence things running in the background, whatever. I mean, they got Kurzweil at DARPA. That's all I got to say. And the White House. When I have a corporation the size of Google, we are not evil, that now is going to start telling me how I run my life, what I do with my garbage. You know, I start to get worried about this because Google no longer is really a technology company. Google is like the plumbing that is behind the evil that is crawling out of the shadows. Anyway, Google is planning for a zero waste circular economy. Don't be evil, but don't waste anything either. The current economy is built on waste. And yes, they are correct on that. I have a big problem with the disposable society that has evolved since we developed plastics, it seems to me. Dig up some materials, turn it into a product, ship it to an end user who eventually tosses it in the trash. But that is starting to change. Google is one of the latest megacorporations to commit to the principles of a circular economy, one that keeps quote-unquote technical nutrients like plastic and silicon out of a landfill and trims out the waste of water, energy, food, and land. And I mean, that's a good idea. They've been finding now all of these dumped electronic devices, not just computers, but old TVs and monitors and all this crap. They were loaded with toxic chemicals that are all sitting in landfills, that are all leaching into water tables. You know, in places like India, Slumdog Millionaire, where they got mountains of the shit, the kids can make a living going through garbage picking, finding circuit boards in things where they can melt it down for the solder or whatever the hell else is in there. But just know that that's all super toxic. Our goal, and this is Google, is to embed circular economic principles into the fabric of Google's infrastructure, operations, and culture, says Kate Brandt, Google's sustainability lead. So I guess they have a sustainability division. What that means is that we'll be focusing on opportunities wherever possible to eradicate waste through smart design at our data centers, in our kitchens, on our campuses, and in all we do around the world. In some ways, these are things the tech giant has already been working on. The company has repurposed hundreds of thousands of servers instead of replacing them, for example, and experimented with data centers that reuse wastewater from sewage treatment plants. Well, again, very good. We talked about that with the NSA. When the NSA's big data center was taking millions of gallons a day to cool all their servers off, yet they are approving toilet to tap in drought-stricken California and allowing the frackers to frack over clean water aquifers. I was like, what? Why would you let data centers and frackers use fresh water and the people drink toilet water? Use that brown water to cool the servers and to frack. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I got to give Google kudos for that at least. and the repurposing the hundreds of thousands of servers. Well, you know what? That's pretty good too. But instead of replacing them or throwing them away, I mean, another thing would be, why don't you give them to a school? I'm sure a Google server is way better than anything we have at a school. I'm still running machines here that are 12 years old, like the one I'm talking on right now. And these things have long since been pulled out of production in a business environment, long since been written off and quote-unquote destroyed. And they're still functional machines that didn't go to a landfill that have 22,000 upgrades on them. And you know what? And they still work. So why get rid of them is what I say. I always can use an old server for something. It says, but now Google wants to go further. In a new partnership with Ellen MacArthur's Foundation, a nonprofit that helps companies transition to the circular economy. I think we got to find out who the Ellen MacArthur Foundation is. They plan to go big. The way that they'll work with us is to really understand the business and then understand how circularity can be applied to take the efforts to the next level, says Brandt. The company will choose two flagship projects to work on over the next year. We think our infrastructure, operations, and our culture are all places where we can really embed this and really innovate. And eventually, it's possible they'll build tools for others trying to eliminate waste. And you know that's where this is going. Google, of course, is eating their own dog food right now, as my old boss John would say. They're trying to figure out how to get it done. They got a consultant coming in, going to help them write that little business plan on how to be circular and green. And then they're going to come apply that to the rest of the world and teach everybody else how we got to run a circular green economy. Again, this is all about getting rid of the carbon and the garbage. And again, it's not a bad thing. I don't think we should be chucking hard drives everywhere. And this is actually a good thing. Somebody's going to be able to profit from this, I'm certain. We're a company that has solved hard challenges on a global scale, driving every road and mapping it and putting every book online for free, says Brandt of Google. We get excited about these challenges that ultimately make people's lives better and that we can apply to some of our skills at Google. And what is so exciting about circularity? Well, the technology is a key enabler of the shift toward a regenerative circular economy, and Google's commitment to the circular economy innovation represents an immensely important opportunity to scale up the transition at a global level to achieve the system transformation needed for our economy to work in the long term. And, you know, we're going to talk about our economy tomorrow, because I found a couple stories now discussing robots, about what's going to happen once we are no longer an economy that produces things. And that we will discuss tomorrow. And again, this is all this future, you know, COP21 stuff. I mean, they're talking about how to bring out all the greenhouse gases and be green and whatever. Well, this is all part of this. Shifting to a circular economy, cutting out everything from food waste to upcycling materials to eliminating wasted resources like cars or offices that often sit empty. Yeah, like Google's self-driving cars. Now you don't even need a car. Hey, why waste money on that car that sits in your driveway doing nothing? Just hit the green button on your Android phone and that self-driving Google car will be there to pick you up in 5 minutes. I see it happening. This could save over $2 trillion in Europe alone, this foundation estimates, and it is something that the European Union has been pushing for. The EU plans to release a strategy later this year for transforming themselves into a circular economy. So put on a seatbelt for that one, because that's something we should be paying attention to. All in the name of green. And I guess, here we go, one more thing about Google. So don't worry about it. Google isn't trying to take over the world. Google isn't involved in longevity projects. Google doesn't have the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health that just came to work for them to build mental health diagnoses. Smartphone apps, no. But Google did, which, yes, they did. Google also just filed a patent for a watch that takes your blood without needles. Now, when did I say that? Oh, months ago. I said, you watch, you're going to get one of these little Fitbits. They're going to be putting all your information online and being able to bag, tag, and track you. Yes, little nanobots in your blood. Like they said, to be able to diagnose and treat disease. Well, here it comes. December 7th, 2015, ScienceAlert.com. Google has filed a patent for a smartwatch that can take a small sample of your blood without the use of needles. And, of course, it can help those diabetics more easily monitor their blood glucose levels throughout the day. Yes, it's always for helping somebody. Current diabetics need to finger prick and use a blood glucose meter multiple times a day. And, yeah, I was gestationally diabetic when I was pregnant, so I had to do that. It's not that big of a deal. But based on the limited information we have so far, Google's smartwatch looks smartwatch-like device looks poised to replace that system with something less painful and more automatic. And trust me, a little pin prick in your fingertip, if that hurts, well, then you better check your pain tolerance. It really doesn't hurt. It's just a little twang. Given that the intervention is still in the patent phase, Google is remaining tight-lipped about exactly how the device works, what it might be used for, or even if or when it'll get made, but it has provided a little bit of insight into the process. The patent application reveals that the device first sends an abrupt surge of gas into the barrel containing a microparticle, which then punctures the skin to produce a small drop of blood, and then this blood is sucked into a negative pressure barrel where it can be used for further testing. Oh, Google's going to be taking our blood through Google Watches. All right, guys, so make sure you stick around because it is Monday, and if you can even believe it, my time is about up. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. She has an awesome interview that she pre-recorded for us yesterday from some people living in St. Louis. So that is coming up. There we go. And all kinds of great radio here Monday night. Brand new Truth on the Tracks tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. And Nick Burnaby.